Policymakers across the country are increasingly recognizing the impact that trauma and really bad childhood experiences can have on someone's physical and emotional state in every stage of life. Earlier this year, the National Conference of State Legislatures tallied up almost 40 bills in 18 stages that specifically had language targeting adverse childhood experiences. Wisconsin's First Lady, Tonette Walker, has been leading this effort here in Wisconsin since 2011. She's currently in Washington, D.C., working with Congressman Mike Gallagher of Wisconsin and Congressman Danny Davis of Illinois to introduce the first trauma-specific resolution initiated in the House with bipartisan support. First Lady Tonette Walker, welcome to the program.
Good morning.
And Elizabeth Hudson is with us. She's a licensed social worker, director of the Wisconsin Office of Children's Mental Health. Elizabeth, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. Good morning.
Well, First Lady, let's begin with you. Can you explain to us what are adverse childhood experiences? What are we talking about here?
Well, we're actually talking about children and families who live in toxic stress each and every day. We're talking about 10 different things that really can change the development of a brain when a child is growing up. And those adverse childhood experiences, which is called ACEs, really affects the outcome of life down the road. So we're actually talking about, we're talking about specific things, but it could be anything that really you're in each and every day, and we actually talk about toxic stress.
So the findings from the 2016 National Survey of Children's Health released data showing that 34 million children had at least one adverse childhood experience, while more than 20% experienced two or more adverse childhood experiences. Elizabeth, when you look at these numbers, what does that mean for how children are being impacted in their life?
Well, one of the things that I think is important for people to know is we are getting a multidimensional set of data, in that Wisconsin's been collecting data on ACEs, as Mrs. Walker described them, through what's called the Behavioral Risk Factor Surveillance Survey. And that asks people retrospectively, before the age of 18, did the things Mrs. Walker described happen to you, whether it was living with a person with a mental illness, someone living in a family where someone's incarcerated, substance abuse in the home, emotional abuse, physical abuse, sexual abuse. So it's retrospective. The survey that you're referencing with the data that just came out is actually calling families and saying, in the here and now, have your kids experienced any of these things? So we have this really nice complement showing us multi-generational impacts. And what you've referenced as far as what are the implications of these kids who, you know, parents are reporting these experiences have happened, we know that, as Mrs. Walker said, it can be an assault on the neurobiological development of the child. One of the things that we will talk about this hour, my hope, would be how we start to address that and what we can start to monitor to find out what can buffer those things. So the trajectory, it can be anything from, you know, a physical illness, such as they found the high correlation rates with asthma, COPD, a lung issue, cancer, as well as with kids, behavioral issues. And we can talk about some of the reasons that would happen.
And Mrs. Walker, I'm wondering, you've been working on this issue for years now. Do you think that there is more awareness out there? Are you seeing more organizations, more agencies, state agencies, really turning their attention toward how to support children who have come from these traumatic backgrounds?
We are. And Fostering Futures has been working about 6 years here in Wisconsin. But before that, Elizabeth has been working tirelessly to really train people on ACEs and trauma-informed care for about 5-6 years prior to that. There is a movement all over the country. You see it in with care. You see it with therapy. What we need, what we're looking for, is organizational change. That's what Fostering Futures does. And really, we need it in our policies. And that's really why we are in D.C. We are in Wisconsin. Scott, obviously my husband, the governor, has included state agencies in this training that they're in for 2 years. And he recognizes the importance that state government needs to be trauma-informed. So I think that's where we need to go. There is a movement all over the country. It's wonderful. It's exciting. But we need to get to our policymakers.
We're talking right now with Wisconsin's First Lady, Tonette Walker, who's leading an effort on the ACEs front, the children who are experiencing adverse childhood experiences and the programs building up around them, both in Wisconsin and nationally, as well here with Elizabeth Hudson. She's a licensed social worker, director of the Wisconsin Office of Children's Mental Health. You can join in the conversation, 800-642-1234. Have you or someone you know had adverse childhood experiences? How have these experiences impacted, shaped your life? 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. First Lady Tonette Walker, going back to Fostering Futures, can you tell us a little bit more about what it does and its mission around buffering adverse childhood experiences?
So Fostering Futures we started with a steering committee about 6 years ago. There were 12 community agencies that came together in the Milwaukee area and started talking about exactly what we were going to do in the community to really bring awareness to ACEs and trauma-informed care. And right now, we are in phase two of our project, and we are actually we brought together 21 different agencies, so 14 county agencies, 7 state agencies, and they are in a 2-year program on learning how to hold up the mirror to themselves and learning about ACEs and really having organizational change within in the work that they do. So, and we will move to phase three next year with another 20 groups. And our goal is that we train everyone on ACEs and trauma-informed care. And I would like to say from the bus driver all the way on up to the governor. So that's what our goal is here in Wisconsin, to make Wisconsin the first state that's fully trauma-informed. And we're just going to keep moving that needle.
And when you say trauma-informed care, what does that mean?
So let me give you an example of trauma-informed care. I was in Rock County, and I was visiting the county agency, and they talked about their juvenile justice courts, and they talked about how they used to have a one-time kind of cattle call, and everyone came at the same time to court, and now they've gone to more of every 15 minutes a family shows up, so that a family doesn't have to be away from work, and children don't have to be away from school, and it's stressful to hang out in a lobby all day long waiting for you to be called for court. So that's trauma-informed.
It seems like a subtle change, and yet it can make a big difference, as you're saying, on people's life and how they live and go to work and school.
It is, and Elizabeth has been doing this work for a long time, and maybe she can jump in and give you some more examples. But there are so many examples across Wisconsin that things have been changed. In Waupaca County, the county agency got rid of their automated phone system. You'd think, well, that's easy, right? But if you are someone who's calling in and you're under stress and you you have just can't regulate yourself and you're in all these terrible things that are going on, and you pick up the phone to get help and you get an automated phone system. You can only imagine how sometimes we feel when we're calling our bank or we're calling our another agency about and being put on hold. So, but I know that Elizabeth has lots of great examples.
And I'm going to go back to Elizabeth here in just a moment. California Governor Jerry Brown signed a bill into law this month that will expand screening for children impacted by trauma. It will require that California's Social Services Department adopt protocols for children who have experienced trauma. First Lady Tonette Walker stays with us to discuss efforts here in Wisconsin to reduce and prevent adverse childhood experiences. And Elizabeth Hudson is with us as well. She is a licensed social worker, directs the state's Office of Children's Mental Health. Join in the discussion, 800-642-1234. Have you or someone you know experienced a traumatic childhood? Join us. Over the summer, Republican Congressman Mike Gallagher co-sponsored a bipartisan resolution with Democratic Congressman Danny Davis of Illinois to increase awareness and encourage the use of trauma-informed approaches in existing programs and agencies at the federal level. House Resolution 443 is titled Recognizing the Importance and Effectiveness of Trauma-Informed Care. That resolution is championed by First Lady Tonette Walker, who stays with us where we are reaching her in Washington, D.C. She's working on advancing this resolution. And Elizabeth Hudson is here as well. Elizabeth directs Wisconsin's Office of Children's Mental Health. You can join in with your questions and comments about how to relate to children who have been impacted by adverse childhood experiences, such as the death of a parent, an incarcerated parent, a violent home, or a child exposed to drugs. 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Elizabeth, last year's national survey of children's health shows that nearly 40% of white children have had at least one adverse experience, compared to 51% of Hispanic children and 6 out of 10 African-American children who have ACEs. The report stated that black children represent nearly 64% of children with ACEs. Trauma seems to be a widespread issue in our nation. What are these patterns, racial disparities you're seeing in adverse childhood experiences?
Well, one of the things that has been highlighted in this survey that you have just cited is some of the buffering experiences. So we talk about the adversity and the toxic stress, that overwhelming stress that a young person cannot tolerate and will do damage to the neurobiology as well as sort of the worldview. So if we have buffering experiences, things like family routines, healthy parental health, healthy parent coping, then we often see less impact. So when we're looking at this data and we see, you know, that white kids have this propensity, black kids have this propensity, what we also start to, what we need to look at is what is happening to buffer these experiences, so that the impact that on executive functioning, which is one of the things that researchers are really looking at, how do kids who are trying to deal with toxic stress go to school and sit in a classroom and have the impulse control and emotional control and flexible thinking and memory, when all of those things are what is can be altered by exposure to overwhelming stress? So it's one piece of the puzzle to look at the ACEs, and then the other piece, which is what where science is also devoting a lot of attention, is what can we do as a community and as a family and as a government to provide the buffering experiences that will help carry people through.
And if these traumatic experiences go unchecked, if nothing is done for the child in any special way, what are some health risk factors that can occur?
Well, what they have found in a series of these surveys looking at adults, and again, this is retrospective, they're reflecting back on how many ACEs, so whether or not they had emotional abuse, sexual abuse, physical abuse, et cetera. There's a dose, a stepwise dose response with subsequent health issues such as asthma, cancers, COPD, immune issues, arthritis. So what we're seeing is with the more dose of this toxic stress in your body, the more wear and tear on your body, and the more susceptible you are to certain disease states and health conditions. So it's really this dose response that we're looking at. And they've found that it's not really as important to figure out which ACE you have. Mm. It's really the cumulative toll that those ACEs have on you. One of the things that we look at in the communities of color is what can racism do to that kind of everyday stress that people experience. So it's giving us insight into a lot of different public health issues. One of the things we say is if we look at ACEs and we start to address ACEs, we're really getting at a large scope of public health concerns with one lever point, with one leverage point. So it's not as if, oh, let's just focus on smoking. Let's just focus on obesity. If we focus on ACEs, this has the ability to impact multiple issues that we see correlating to these early issues.
Let's take a call now. John is joining us from Fort Atkinson. Hi, John. Go ahead.
Hi. So I had a terrible experience in school. I was being molested by male teachers. And when I finally reported it to the school, I started when I was a freshman and finally when I was a junior, and absolutely nothing was ever done about it. I spent my whole life being a recluse, is what I've done. I function a little bit in society, but I don't get along. And I'm at the point where I finally realize that I can't be told what to do by anybody because it upsets me. I finally went through a traumatic experience. I thought these people loved me, but I finally, at the age of 60, realized that they were pedophiles.
That
about a year ago, and it was a very traumatic, emotional thing for me to go through.
John, thank you for being able to have the courage to talk about it. First Lady Tonette Walker.
Yeah. Well, I, first of all, let me say, John, I'm so sorry that you weren't heard, that your voice wasn't heard, and that it has affected you your whole life. But this is a good example of toxic stress, a young child living in toxic stress, and really something that you hold on to your whole life. And that's really where we're trying to get at the root causes through with trauma-informed care and ACEs, to get at the root cause of something like John's problem, so that we can actually teach him tips and we can teach him how to really kind of cope with this. He said he has problems with his not being able to be told what to do. Those are the kind of things that we would hope that a therapist that's trained in trauma-informed care and ACEs would be able to help them develop ways to be able to handle those situations when they come up. And so it is something that I personally don't work on. But, you know, John, I just want to let you know that we really, I'm sorry that that's happened to you.
And Elizabeth, would you like to add?
Yeah. Absolutely. What courage. What courage to use your voice at this point in your life. You tried using your voice earlier and it wasn't heard. And one of the principles of trauma-informed care is empowerment. So what you're experiencing, your body reacting when you're being told what to do, has the impact and the reverberation of being violated again or being pushed into a corner. And so with trauma-informed care, what we do is we'll tell employers, you know, you have people working for you that are not going to be as brave as John and come forth and say, I've had this experience. But they're going to react in ways in the workplace that don't make sense to you. So instead of reprimanding people or, you know, firing people, we need to start understanding why people are behaving in ways that don't make sense, because in some ways, the behaviors make a lot of sense. And, John, what you're describing makes complete sense with your history. So the more we can get employers, schools, correctional systems to understand what John is describing, the better we can respond. And that's all based in science. So we're asking all of these systems to say, here's the science. Here's what people like John have been through. How do you need to adapt how you respond? Because what we're doing right now doesn't work.
John, thank you again. And we have a couple questions coming in regarding trauma-informed care and the juvenile justice system. Let's go to Helen in New Glarus. Hi, Helen.
Hi. This program sounds incredibly sensitive and sensible. Do you have operations or systems at the Lincoln Hills Center, which is one of our problems in our state right now?
Elizabeth, would you like to respond to that first?
Sure, sure. One of the things that Governor Walker has done in support and recognition of the effectiveness of trauma-informed care is to bring state agencies on board to say we need to look at the science and then take the science and apply it in our different state agency systems. And one of those systems is the Department of Corrections. So, yes. That is something that is being integrated. This, as you can imagine, when you're trying to change the way people see things, in fact, one of our bylines is shift your perspective. So shift your perspective from seeing what's wrong with people to what might have happened to people. This is a slow process, but the state agencies like the Department of Corrections are ramping this up as quickly as possible.
Helen, thanks for that question.
Yeah, thank you.
And First Lady Tonette Walker, you're working with Representative Mike Gallagher and Congressman Rodney Davis of Illinois to introduce this first traumatic-specific resolution in the House of Representatives. Can you tell us about where this resolution stands right now?
Yes. Well, the resolution stands where we're trying to get other legislators to sign on to the House resolution. And that's basically why we're out here in D.C. and just asking for support. We're Congressman Davis and Gallagher both have come together and done a Dear Colleague letter and sent that out to their colleagues. So it's ongoing. We're working at it. We're trying to sign on anybody who will listen to us. It's pretty, it's a pretty kind of non-partisan kind of resolution. It's just talking about awareness and what's going on in the states. So we hope that we will get something going with that by early next year. But, you know, Congress is slow, so we're gonna keep at it.
And why do you think it's necessary to take a national approach, a federal approach to the impact of trauma?
Well, we see that the work that we're doing in Wisconsin, Elizabeth talked about Lincoln Hills, it's a process. It's a learning community. It's changing the way you think on the way you handle patients, way you handle outcomes in your business. And so it's a slow process, but we need the federal government to start looking at ACEs and trauma-informed care in the work that they do. And so we can't hold back and wait until Wisconsin's fully trauma-informed. We have to include the federal government in this. So we're just going to keep at it.
Let's go to Kathy now in Deerfield, who has a question. Hi, Kathy. Go ahead.
Good morning. Thank you, ladies, for your work in this area. Our children in Wisconsin so need a strong voice at the national, at the state level to, you know, take care of them. And my question is kind of piggybacking on the last caller about Lincoln Hills. There's been so much negative press lately about the children who are incarcerated and attacking staff and the states calling to close the facility because they don't know what to do with these children. What can we do right now for these kids that have been traumatized and are continuing to be traumatized by, you know, where they're placed? This should be on the front burner. This is, you know, a crisis right now in our state. What can we do right now, I guess is my question.
Elizabeth?
Yeah, so what we know about kids that are in crisis and staff that are in crisis, because what you're pointing out is this system where I like to use the analogy of the nervous system. It's become dysregulated. And if you think of a human being whose nervous system is highly dysregulated, they're not able to control impulses, they're overwhelmed with emotion, they can't think clearly. One of the things we can do as a state and a community is offer a holding environment. And what you don't want to do with a person is attack the person and push, as John mentioned, push them into a corner and make them feel trapped. So as a community, what we do is what you're saying, is we open ourselves to questions in a very calm and anchored way, and we offer support. I think sometimes what can happen when things become political is there are more attacks which create more dysregulation, which create a more unsafe environment. So we're looking at how do you bring back routine? How do you make sure that the adults that are serving the young people are very centered and their nervous system is being regulated, that they're healthy, that they feel good about going to work, and that then is transmitted to the kids. I think the cycle that we get in is to really kind of ramp up the negativity, which is very unhelpful.
And First Lady Tonette Walker, would you like to respond with what people can do immediately in their lives?
So, I guess just recognizing that people do have trauma is probably key, and that these traumas, these situations in their lives that they lived in have changed, have outcomes in their lives. So if you're living in a home and you have someone like John who might have an outburst, recognize that there might be a reason for that outburst. Mm-hmm. Or if you have a child that's in school and struggling, recognize the fact that he might be living in toxic stress. So I think that just being aware of ACEs and trauma-informed care changes the way that people look at things.
In Wisconsin, 41% of children and teens have experienced a traumatic event, like the death or incarceration of a parent, witnessing or being a victim of violence. That's according to federal state-by-state survey data released this month from the 2016 National Survey of Children's Health. First Lady of Wisconsin, Tonette Walker, has been taking a lead on this issue of adverse childhood experiences. And Elizabeth Hudson is here with us as well, directs Wisconsin's Office of Children's Mental Health. Join in, 800-642-1234. The term adverse childhood experiences, or ACEs, appeared on our radar following this landmark study almost 20 years ago by Kaiser Permanente and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. It showed the prevalence of childhood adversity and its overwhelming link with poor health outcomes. And over the decades, there have been major advances in brain science and biology to better explain the connection. That is, excessive and prolonged stress changes the hormonal balance in the developing brain and body, causing long-term damage. We're discussing ACEs with First Lady Tonette Walker, who has made this a health initiative here in Wisconsin and nationally, and Elizabeth Hudson, who heads the State Office of Children's Mental Health. Your questions are welcome at 800-642-1234. How would you like agencies to treat children exposed to trauma at an early age? What questions do you have about trauma-informed care? Join in the discussion at 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. So, Early in the early child care and the education setting, the employees from the playing field here in Madison earlier this month discussed the importance and effectiveness of trauma-informed care within early child care centers. Can you, First Lady, explain the role creating trauma-informed care, early learning spaces, and services that play into preventing and reducing ACEs when kids are in daycare?
Well, I think we need to really start with these young children, because we know that their brains are developing, and so the daycare center that we visited really incorporates trauma-informed care in the work that they do. They try to keep the child with the same teacher all the way through the whole experience that they have at the daycare, so that the child is bonding with someone, who builds a relationship with someone. And so they have used lots of trauma-informed care principles in the work that they're doing. And it's so important that we reach these children at a young age.
And Paul from Eau Claire emailed. He says, since single motherhood is linked to adverse childhood experiences in children, especially boys, what is being done to address the single motherhood issue? Elizabeth?
Well, we can go to something like your reference to the playing field. If we have a single mother, what we want to be able to create is a community that provides support and assistance to the parent, so that parent can be, as Mrs. Walker stated, a stable relational connection, and that the daycare can step in when that becomes a great challenge. In fact, when people are asked in retrospect what helped them most to buffer the ACEs that they were experiencing, they stated that it was having someone to talk with about feelings. It was also having someone stand by them when things got tough. So that not only applies to the little ones, but it also applies to the parents.
Colleen on Facebook says, many people do not speak up about their trauma until adulthood, if ever. The stigma around mental health and the lack of insurance coverage for mental health treatment are barriers to healing at every age. First Lady, how would you respond to Colleen?
So it is hard to talk about these things. It is hard to understand why sometimes we react one way or another. And I think that having this dialogue now, the more we talk about it, the more we bring it to awareness, the more that your workplace knows about ACEs and trauma-informed care can help. You know, it's a tough one, but I think that at any age you can get skills, to be helped learn resiliency. There are lots of good new things out there all the time, and we have to be our own advocates sometimes and try to search those out and find out what might help you succeed in life. So it's tough, I know.
And Elizabeth, do you see the stigma in your work around mental health and people not speaking up, whether they be a young child or an adult, such as John earlier?
Well, one of the fascinating changes that we're seeing, especially in young kids, is a much greater awareness and ability to talk about feelings. And school-based mental health, which has been promoted across the state over the past five or so years, is giving kids opportunities to talk to their peers about these issues and hopefully bringing a greater acceptance of these are often experiences that happen to children and families. And the more we're able to talk about it, address it, normalize it, and then offer strategies to support, the earlier we can reach people. So, access is difficult. One of the things that we're hoping with Fostering Futures and other initiatives is when you do access a provider, they know about the science and they know that they have to address, as Mrs. Walker said, the root cause and not just deal with the superficial symptoms.
Let's take another call now at 800-642-1234. Regina in Maquanago. Hi, Regina.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call. I am so applauding you for having this show and having Tonette Walker on and this. I'm sorry I didn't catch the name of the other speaker.
Elizabeth Hudson. Uh-huh.
Thank you, Ms. Hudson, because this is absolutely essential that this come forward, because this is the root cause, just like you're saying, of tons of problems. I'm a nurse, and I've worked in the emergency department for many, many years, and this is the bottom line for most of the care that I see. And what's terrifying most people on an endless basis, day to day, is the fact that our health care is tied to employment, and we're all scared to death of losing work, either by injury, illness, an employer doesn't get along with you, and now you're stuck. And that's traumatizing in and of itself. So we've got to have access, and you can't do that when you live on the head of this pin every day wondering whether or not you'll have access to a doctor or access to health care, because it doesn't exist unless you have private insurance from an employer. And, you know, you can buy into the marketplace, but it's just so tenuous. It's living with that tenuous nature of being able to have access to health care. It's killing people not having that.
And I'll have Elizabeth, you address this, and especially the ability to see in hospitals, in ERs, where there is traumatic stress going on, whether it is, whatever the stress may be, from work-related or something else going on.
Absolutely. I applaud Regina for her work because, as she says, people are coming in not only having a history, likely, since we know there's such a high prevalence of ACEs, having a history of experiences, but then being in crisis in the moment and also having the fear of paying for the service that they're trying to access. And unfortunately, not only are people sort of on the head, they're trying to figure out what's going on with healthcare, there's a dysregulation in our country around just which directions, which policies are going to be passed. So all of this is cumulative. And what we're trying to do is give people enough structure and information and be as transparent as possible throughout the process as a government in order to address some of that emotional tension. And I don't think there's an easy answer for the issue she's raising around people's fear of losing health care. I think it's real. And transparency of government and government's ability to take action is really important.
And First Lady Tonette Walker, where is Wisconsin going next with trauma-informed care and adverse childhood experiences? What's the next step in this?
Well, for us, we'll go anywhere. We'll talk to any organization, any group about trauma-informed care and ACEs. So our next step in Fostering Futures, it will be in 2018. We'll bring another 20 different learning communities, different organizations together into a learning community. You know, we're going to keep at the federal government. We're going to keep at the legislation here in locally in Wisconsin. We're going to continue to raise awareness for trauma-informed care and ACEs. And this is a true public health problem, and we have to really keep working at that, and we have to get at the root cause of these problems, and that's what trauma-informed care and ACEs does.
And Elizabeth, for you in your work, as you see the impact of mental health issues on children, where do you see trauma-informed care making the greatest difference?
I would say you're going to hate my answer because it's multidimensional. Families that are able to offer routines and structure as well as emotional support and be tellable, communities that hold the family and provide support and helpfulness during crisis, and schools and early child care, because that's the other place that young people land. So it's making sure that the caregivers in early child care and in the schools, and I'm not just talking about teachers, we're talking about people who are, doing lunch duty or outside, being with the kids. All of those relationships that are positive for that child buffer the child against toxic stress and build resilience.
So there's many touch points in that child's life that people who should be aware of how their relationship is with the child.
Absolutely. And just think that gives us so much more hope and possibility that it doesn't land in just one spot. It's really a collection, as you said, of touch points.
Well, Elizabeth Hudson, thank you so much for being here to help explain this issue. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
And First Lady Tonette Walker, thanks for taking the time to be with us. We appreciate it. We've been discussing state and national efforts to get trauma-informed care more ingrained in state agencies and organizations that work with children who have experienced trauma in their lives. This hour of The Morning Show was produced by Nyasia Ellison and Keely Baltina. Michelle Johnson is executive producer and provided technical direction. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and you're listening to the Ideas Network. Coming up tomorrow at this time, we'll talk about what it means to have a midlife crisis. Thanks for listening.